So set before me was a beautiful banquet, wonderful, nourishing food with all the finest silverware and all the finest drink. And yet I turned away and chose to eat out of the dumpster. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm in recovery for the use of internet pornography. Hello, my name is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Okay, now I need my reading glasses. I'm the second of five children born into a loving Catholic home to two parents who celebrated 56 years of marriage this year and who provided a stable home environment for the five of us children. I grew up with all my needs met, food, clothing, shelter, and security. But I do recall times of tension between my parents whenever they sat down each month to pay the bills, which I internalized as there not being enough money. And it was a worry that I was aware of during my growing up years. The fear of there not being enough, whether it was money, time, love, or attention, was something I've had to work through in my work here in Celebrate Recovery. But more on that later. My dad had grown up in rural Idaho and had experienced the loss of his mother when he was 16 after a long and painful battle with cancer. Other than her early death, there weren't many stories of my paternal grandmother growing up. But in recent years, I learned that she was in excruciating pain in the years that led to her death, and my dad would leave the house to escape the painful environment. I can see in looking back at my upbringing that I inherited some of that coping mechanism when dealing with conflict. My mom grew up as the oldest in a family of four with two raging and abusive alcoholic parents. I was only aware of the alcoholism growing up as my maternal grandmother had gained sobriety after divorcing my grandfather and attending Alcoholics Anonymous. She celebrated 20 plus years of sobriety before her death in her late 50s. I was not aware of the abuse that happened to my mother until she addressed it in recovery once I was off to college. So that trauma unconsciously colored her behavior as I was growing up. She was also raised as a Southern woman in the 50s, and the expected polite response to abuse was to smile and to say everything is fine, even when it's not. One dynamic that I vividly remember from my childhood is my mother often smiling and saying everything is fine while stress was building up in her life. But later in the day or the week, she would hit a tipping point and explode in anger with yelling and sometimes the slamming of cupboards and doors. My siblings and I would immediately head outside or to our rooms while my dad would intervene to calm her down. It was a pattern that I observed regularly and internalized and carried again into my adulthood. Some of the messages that I took in as an adolescent were that I was lazy, selfish, not doing what I was supposed to do, and that conflict is to be avoided. I learned how to do whatever it takes to avoid conflict and try to prevent the outburst of anger. I tried to be good, and when conflict arose, I would apologize or take responsibility for everything or suppress what I wanted or needed in order to preserve harmony. But in giving up that part of myself, I see now that I repeated some of those behaviors in my own acting out. Whether it was immersing myself in work or looking to escape in food, alcohol, or sex, for me, when I didn't want to feel feelings, I would either look for a physical outlet in the form of playing a sport, or I'd get busy with work because accomplishments get you recognition, which reinforced my behavior of getting busy when experiencing feelings that I preferred to avoid. It was also a reaction to being labeled lazy as a youth. Another behavior I would use to feel better was to eat, especially treats like ice cream, candy, or cake. For much of my life, I had a high-calorie metabolism that allowed me to use food for comfort without the accompanying weight gain. That stopped being true in my 40s. And now it's another area that I am examining to see if I'm trying to avoid feelings when I overeat. My vices to avoid feelings, again, are food, alcohol, sex, and work, which aren't very relational. However, I do recognize God's hand in helping me over the years to reject certain habits, addictions, or vices. The first, when I was around the age of 10, I stole a pack of non-filtered Camel cigarettes from my grandmother's suitcase and smoked the whole thing in 30 minutes. As a result, I became sick to my stomach, never to be able to stand the smell of cigarette smoke again to this day. Or the second one, when I was 14 and I was working on a farm and took a big snuff of Copenhagen Chew, only to get sick, lose my lunch, and never touch it again. Or there were two occasions in college when I overdid it with alcohol, only to get terribly sick. So again, not to repeat that. Although the experience didn't cause me to give up alcohol, it did rein in getting stumbling drunk. Alcohol has played a part in lowering... my inhibitions, which is something I must be aware of constantly to interrupt negative behavior from my hurts, habits, and hang-ups. As a young boy, I was full of energy, never eager to sit still, and full of life. I loved to play, run, and laugh. When I was age 6 or 7, I was sexually molested by my aunt, who was a teenager at the time. Up to this point, I was very innocent about human sexuality and did not experience feelings of lust or shame. But following that experience, I was confused and overly aware of my sexual desires and often filled with shame. I told no one of that experience, as she was family and that it wasn't something that family talked about. I grew up with a passion for sports. My dad was a football and baseball all-star growing up, earning a sports scholarship to college and playing minor league baseball. I always looked up to him and wanted to excel at sports. In grade school and middle school, I enjoyed playing basketball and baseball. From my dad's example, a big part of my identity centered around being an athlete. But my freshman year in high school, I grew 6 inches and became uncoordinated and slow, barely making the sports team I tried out for. It was hard not to feel hurt by rejection of ranking at the bottom of the team and watching games from the sidelines. But by my junior year, my body caught up with my growth and I excelled at sports. I took pride in going from the guy on the bottom to a starter in the varsity team. Sports became a way of getting recognition, acceptance, as well as a physical outlet for stress. God and church were always a part of my life growing up. I was baptized into the Catholic Church as an infant, went through first confession, first communion as a second grader, and received confirmation in 8th grade. I continued my Catholic education at an all-boys high school, attending retreats my junior and senior year that were transformative in my spiritual growth, as well as my relationship with my classmates. I had a prayer class my junior year that helped me develop a personal relationship and prayer life with Christ. I was skinny most of my growing up years and found myself shy about girls when I was in middle school, as I wasn't the muscular, handsome, or confident guy I figured most girls were interested in. I did date regularly throughout my high school years and had a serious girlfriend my senior year and into my freshman year of college. I enjoyed the feeling of being in love and the affection my girlfriend and I shared. But once away at college, I could see that the two of us were too different to be together long term, so I broke it off. Later that year, I met a young lady who had been married and divorced, came from a broken family, and was hungry for approval and affection. I viewed myself as a hero, the one who would show her love and respect. I would gauge my worth by how she felt about me and about life in general. Within 6 months of our dating, I started to realize I was feeling tremendous pressure to be her everything, and that her happiness was dependent on me. And as a 19-year-old, it was more than I could handle. I broke off our relationship and found myself depressed. As the fall trimester ended my sophomore year, my depression, sleep deprivation, and drinking at the end of a term party landed me in a state where I was exhausted and in a fog, where I could not tell what was going on in conversations or interactions with others. It was a scary time for me. I went home on break, and my parents asked how things were going, and I told them much of what I was experiencing. Loneliness, spiritual isolation. I would open the Bible and find it dry and arid, feeling like I was only Christian at school, although I wasn't living it, and emotionally exhausted. My parents asked if they could lay on hands and pray over me. They had been involved in the Catholic Charismatic Renewal in the 70s, and when I was in high school, I told them, "That's okay for you, but I'm not interested in laying on hands or speaking in tongues or any of that." But because I was at such a low point in my life, I surrendered and said, sure, why not? It can't hurt. They prayed over me and asked that God bring Christians into my life that would support me and help me grow in my relationship with God. When I returned to college that winter term, I was at my desk doing homework when my roommate asked, hey, there's a new Bible study starting up with a minister from the United Evangelical Free Church here on campus. Would you like to come with me? I said, yes. Grabbed my Bible, and out the door we went. We started with the Gospel of Mark, and the words just leapt off the page and spoke straight to my heart and quenched a deep thirst. Much of the scripture I'd heard growing up, but it had laid fallow, and now it sprouted and flourished. I developed strong relationships with people in the Bible study and became close personal friends. Truly an answer to the prayer my parents had prayed when I had come home on break. For the next 18 months, I intentionally did not date as I needed some time for my own personal growth and healing. I grew in my relationship with Christ and found fellowship with a close group of Christian friends through the remainder of my college years and beyond. My wife and I met each other at church. I was in formation with the Franciscan religious order to become a Catholic priest, and my wife was in the church choir and then signed up to serve in the Peace Corps in the Dominican Republic. The Catholic priesthood requires men to profess a lifetime of celibacy and to forego being married. While I thought that God might be leading me into that, I struggled with the idea of not having a wife and children. I wanted to hold another person and be held. My wife and I would get to know each other in the coming months through activities at the church, prayer services, serving dinners, youth ministry, and serving in a homeless shelter. In the early spring of that year, I left the formation program, and my wife canceled her trip into the Peace Corps. Later that fall, we were married, and the following year, we welcomed our son into the world. 2 years later, our daughter was born, and we were complete as a family. I worked in the high-tech industry, and my wife was a stay-at-home mother and a homemaker. We raised our kids and got them through college, all while having our ups and downs as a family. My first experience with pornography came in the form of magazines that I came across at relatives' or friends' houses throughout my growing up years. My first memory was during middle school years. I found that it stirred up lust and a distorted view of human sexuality and beauty. It wasn't something that I sought out even in my adulthood, as I wasn't comfortable going to a store to purchase a magazine or go to a video store. It wasn't until internet pornography became available that I found myself viewing pornography with any regularity. Each time I viewed it, I would feel guilty and shame and would vow not to do it again. I'd go to confession, then be good for another 30 to 60 days until something would happen that would have me feeling things I wanted to avoid, whether it was rejection, anxiety, fear, loneliness. I returned to pornography as an escape. Looking back, Paul's letter to the Romans chapter 7, verse 15, really resonated with my life. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. In the fall of 2014, my wife and I took a marriage enrichment class at church that was developed by a Christian counseling organization. As we attended classes and worked through the chapters of a workbook, we arrived at chapter 7 about honesty. The author asserted, no area of your life should be kept secret. All of your spouse's questions should be answered fully and completely. So on November 8th, 2014, I shared with my wife that for the past 6 to 8 years, I struggled on occasion with pornography. She was devastated by this news and deeply hurt by my unfaithfulness. In my mind, I'd compartmentalized pornography as a thing, completely disconnected from relationship, as an inanimate object. But for my wife, it was the same as another person coming into our relationship. It was a betrayal of my marriage vows. For the next few weeks, we were not able to live under the same roof as the hurt was too deep. I sat down with my kids and my daughter-in-law and confessed my struggle with pornography and the resulting hurt to our marriage. As they were all young adults, my wife and I were not going to pretend that everything was okay between us, and I took responsibility to explain the cause of our separation. Again, with the hindsight of working a step study, I would advise getting counsel from your sponsor or a CR leader prior to sharing with extended family members and possibly impacting them. We received a recommendation for a Christian counselor to begin sessions with the hope of healing ourselves and our marriage. After a couple of meetings, he suggested going to meetings at a church in Boring, Oregon that had small groups for guys struggling with pornography and for their spouses who had been impacted by it. Through some searching, we found a meeting at Good Shepherd Community Church and attended. After attending our first meeting, we discovered there were Celebrate Recovery communities across the Portland metro area and found one closer to home, landing here at Rolling Hills, and I've been coming here ever since. I attended a step study hosted by David and Ron later that spring and found a sponsor. Through the step study, I could work through many of the hurts I had experienced throughout my lifetime. I was holding on to resentment and unforgiveness that I had not examined. The format of the step study allowed me to share freely with my brothers in Christ who listened, they loved me, and journeyed with me as I worked through the muck and mire of my life. It was very healing during my step 4, lesson 8, not only to create a searching and fearless moral inventory of the wrongs I had done, but also to list the positives. As Lamentations 3:40 says, "Let us examine our ways and test them." I examined all of my ways, both the good and the bad. The balanced approach was extremely helpful in my recovery. When I got to step 9, we made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I recognized it was too late as it related to the confession to my wife. I had bluntly gone and confessed to her. While I gained freedom from the secrecy and the shame, it came at an unacceptable price to my wife's sanity and to her heart. If you're a newcomer and walk through these doors for the first time, or someone who's not yet done a step study, please find an experienced sponsor and learn from their wisdom and counsel before acting on some of the 12 steps, especially step 9, making amends. Working through the step study on my hurts, habits, and hang-ups, I can now address feelings and thoughts as they surface. Through an incredible fellowship and support of the guys in my small group and my step study, I no longer isolate when I'm having a hard time. I no longer put pressure on my wife to provide all of my emotional needs. I can check in with her, and if she's not able to say yes to listening to me, I can reach out to the guys who support me and get the support that I need. In the past, I would not have risked rejection from other men. But through this program and the building up of trust, I now have guys that love me no matter what. As I was working with a Christian counselor, he used the metaphor of going into the ditch on the side of the road for failing to uphold commitments or giving up sobriety. He asked me to examine what are the things that are on the shoulder of the road that can lead to the ditch. For me, it's using alcohol when I'm alone. It's surfing the internet, especially sites that target men, like sporting sites with suggestive advertising. It's not reaching out to others when I'm hurting. In the CR program, we refer to the things that can cause us to go into the ditch as triggers. I have a job that occasionally requires travel. Being on the road can create feelings of stress or loneliness and isolation. On occasion, my wife has generously offered to travel with me on business, both on short trips as well as longer times away from home. Having home away from home is a privilege and a help. But for those times when I travel alone, I have attended meetings in other cities and benefited from the fellowship while away from home. While it takes time to look up meetings, scouting them in advance and making a commitment ahead of time to go is a good way to set up a successful trip. Other things I do is I ask the front desk to disconnect the cable TV when I check in. I bring pictures of my wife and kids and place them around the hotel room. When I'm out to dinner or a business meeting, I avoid all alcohol, as that can lower my inhibitions and become a trigger for me. I have accountability partners back home that are praying for me and that I check in with at the end of the day. I call my wife as I'm going to bed and discipline myself to get to bed at a reasonable hour. Each of these steps have been a tremendous help to avoiding triggers in my life. I'm so thankful to have found the CR community here at Rolling Hills. The weekly meetings and small groups where I can share my ups and downs without judgment have been healing and affirming. I am thankful for my accountability partners who hold me to my word and encourage me on the journey, and to the guys who act as my sponsors and respond to text or calls when I hit a patch of rough road. If this is your first time at Celebrate Recovery, keep coming back, as it's a loving and healing community. Thank you all for listening.